coming to you live from my apartment. It's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who says, I'm not confident, I'm crazy, Rob Sesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. I am Rob Sesternino, and welcome to our episode one recap of Survivor 35. That would be the heroes versus the healers versus the hustlers. And I'm really excited to have a fantastic guest with us today, a good friend of mine, the winner of Survivor Africa, Ethan Zahn, and he is going to be with us to talk about everything from the episode. And I'm sure we will talk a lot about his time in Survivor Africa and Survivor All-Stars here on the Recap Podcast. Very excited to have you back here with us. This is our third podcast after this week's Survivor episode. We had the Survivor Know-It-Alls with Stephen Fishback on Wednesday night, and then my exit interview with Katrina, as well as the This Week in Survivor History Quiz versus Paul Osselson. Both of those are in our Survivor podcast feed. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes to subscribe. We always appreciate your feedback and star ratings as well. And then coming up on the weekend, I'm going to be getting together with Taryn Armstrong. Of course, you know Taryn from all of our Big Brother coverage, The Taryn Show. He edited all of First One Out for Josh Wigler. He's going to be joining me to answer your voismail. So get those calls in. robhasawebsite.com/voicemail for that. Or you can call in your voicemails as well. 323-282-RHAP. You have until Saturday morning to get your calls and submissions into the show for our big feedback show, which will be dropping for you sometime Sunday night, and then be on the lookout for the Wiggle Room as well coming up next week. Before we get to Ethan, I just want to quickly mention at the start of a new Survivor season about what we're doing on Patreon. Of course, many of you have heard us talk about Patreon over the years on the show. Patreon is a way for people to help support Rob as a Podcast on a monthly basis. I'm very proud of the patron community that we've built over the years. We have a ton of exclusive content for our patrons, which includes a monthly call-in show. I do a weekly podcast with the First Lady of Podcasting, Nicole Sesternino, where we get into a number of things. We actually launched a new behind-the-scenes webisode, a video series about everything that goes on in the making of the podcast and in my life. And in fact, I'm actually being filmed for it right now as we speak. That is called Rehapisodes. That's available for patrons as well as discounts on our live show tickets, and then also codes for the different audiobooks that we do, much more. If you want to find out more information about everything that you get for being a patron, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. Check out the video and all of the different tiers and benefits that we have if you would like to help support Rob Has a Podcast at robhasawebsite.com/patron. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring in our guest today to kick off the new Survivor season. We have never done an episode recap, a full-on, just me and this guy talking about what's going on Survivor. Please welcome in the winner of Survivor Africa and Amazing Race player. Also, Ethan's on. Ethan, how are you?
I am great.
Yes.
This is quite an honor. Quite an honor.
Yes. Very excited to talk to you. And I'm glad that you agreed to do this because this is going to be very fun. I get a lot of requests to have you on the show and have had for some time. People, even though it's been a minute, people still want to hear you talk about this game.
Man, you know all the right things to say. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yes. And very nice to have you here. Then can you believe, we are going on, it's almost 15 years since I first met you.
That, you know, I think about that sometimes. And you
that specifically?
That exact moment, the moment we met, I actually think about that moment. I think it was at some restaurant after party in New York City. After Survivor Amazon finale.
No, that was it. You're right. I was going to say that it was when we were on the stage at Carnegie Hall for the announcement of Survivor All-Stars. That was really the first time that, you know, we were not at like some big party.
Right. Yes, of course.
Yes. Yes. Now all these years later, here we are talking about heroes and healers and hustlers. Who would have thought?
Where do you think you would have from there?
I would say that I'm probably a hustler, but I think you're the more interesting one.
Well, post-survivor.
Yeah.
Pre-survivor, I was just a guy, just a hustler.
A hero raising so much money for charity, and then, hustling, and then also you've been a healer.
I have been a healer, and I've been healed, actually. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It goes, I've seen both sides of this story.
Yeah. How are you doing that? Just to give anybody an update that has not heard from you recently, could you give us a health update?
Sure. I am alive.
Yes.
And I went through a pretty rough time for a few years, but I survived cancer twice, and I just hit 5 years in remission this past March. So it's been quite a journey for me in a lot of different ways, but I'm here, I'm around, I'm alive, and I still love the show Survivor.
Okay. You're feeling great. And is that what you are primarily focused on raising money for at this point, or is grassroots soccer still the primary focus?
Grassroots soccer is still my primary focus. That's my passion. That is something that was sprung from the television show Survivor, which is pretty cool, but that's definitely something I feel most passionate about. Cancer, I'm involved with a bunch of different charities trying to help other charities raise money or raise awareness and things like that.
Okay. Well, Ethan, first off, let's talk about this premiere of Survivor: Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers. Did you like this concept, this idea of, okay, this is how other people see these individuals? Did you think that this was a good idea to divide the tribes this way?
I think they're always looking for fun and interesting and innovative ways to kind of grab attention. So I think it's fine. I don't necessarily think all those people would have identified themselves under those categories. I could be mistaken, but when Jeff announced that those were the tribes and that's why they were in those tribes, some people looked a little bit surprised or kind of clicked with them, like, oh yeah, well, I guess that makes sense. So I don't necessarily know if they see themselves under those, labels, but it's nice for the audience to see them that way.
Yeah. And I guess they just have to run with it, because you have a character like Ryan, who is just like now starting to, as a hustler now. Okay. I have this thing. I've got to go ahead and try to make this work for me, having this idol, as now I have to identify as a hustler. You have to really get your head around what's going on.
Right. And hypothetically speaking, if you had a strategy coming into the show where you didn't necessarily wanted to be a hustler, you wanted to be like a hero status, like Jeff is throwing this label on you that you might need to live up to it first.
Yeah.
And obviously everyone else playing the game is seeing you as like, oh, that dude's a hustler. He's going to do whatever he needs to do to get ahead in the game. Like, that's a label that's placed on you that you don't want placed on you.
Mm-hmm. Now, this was a pretty crazy night in terms of paranoia about the hidden immunity idol. Were you surprised that survivors are interrogating each other like this so early in the game?
Very surprised. I've heard and I've seen that, the show, it's on. Like the moment the game starts, people are playing pretty hard. But I was definitely surprised, with Alan and his kind of aggressive attempt at unmasking, if you will, mm-hmm. This hidden idol that didn't even exist, as a strategy to kind of put yourself out there purposely to look like a crazy guy, to look absolutely insane and paranoid, to place, blame on someone else is a really interesting strategy. And I'm curious to see how that plays out, because that's putting attention on himself to look like a crazy guy, but he's really just trying to make other people look, more crazy than he is.
Well, what do you think? Do you feel like that he really was just trying to point the finger at them, or do you feel like he really believed it?
I think he didn't really know what would happen, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I feel like he was a little bit in panic mode, and he was just kind of looking for any way to make sure he wasn't the first voted off.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Yeah, because I really feel like that he believed he really did have the idol, and then after the fact tried to save face and say, like, well, I was just trying to make it look like and throw the suspicion on them, and that way it's just the same as if I found out they had the idol. But I believe he thinks that guy, that JP, really had that idol.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Yeah, I mean, you think it's only 3 days, or maybe that was day two, like, you know, I don't know. It seems like, you know, what was shocking to me in a kind of a bigger picture way is, like, if you look what happened on the Healers tribe as well, you know, with Joe and Mike Z, similar situation, right? These physically bigger people are almost bullying these, you know, weaker players in a subservient way to force them to, you know, show their hand. And it was a little bit disturbing in a way that they came at these people, accusing them of something only to try to get the truth out of them. Like, that's bullying. That's kind of intimidating. That's a power play. It was a little bit scary if you think about it.
Ethan, would you have dropped Trow like JP did if someone was accusing you of having the idol and you didn't have it?
Depending on the temperature outside, and if I had recently been in the water,
in the ocean,
I would have probably, I would not have dropped Trow, but then, like, how do you get yourself out of that situation? So if he had said, no, I'm not showing you my pockets, I'm not taking off my pants, I'm not going for a swim, like, then, you know, Al all of a sudden is like, well, I see you have the idol. If you won't, you know, get naked, then, you know, I'm going to tell everyone you have the idol and you're going to get voted off tonight. So he was in a pretty bad situation there.
I mean, it really was a surreal moment in Survivor history where somebody is accusing another person of having the idol. And he just said, look, I will completely, he just took his pants off and said, okay, here I am. I'm ready for, like, my TS. Say a frisk now. And then we saw where Alan is, like, checking on the floor and looking around. I mean, this really was a bizarre moment.
It was. And I mean, in theory, it should have been Mike, the urologist, asking, you know, Bed, JP, you know, to take off his pants. But anyway, it was interesting.
Yeah, the whole thing was really crazy. Yeah, and as you mentioned, Mike was in a similar situation with Joe when Joe was asking him about the idol. Now, Mike did not offer to disrobe. You would think that he would be the one that would come to him quicker of the idea of, okay, well, let me prove to you I don't have the idol.
Right. He did have two little pieces of string in each pocket, which was kind of weird.
Why do you have all that string?
It was like a scene from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. It's like, all I need is a, you know, cool brew. And he pulls out this trash from his pocket. He's like, this is all I got, dude.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, I was surprised at how aggressive they were coming at these, you know, creating a false situation only to put someone else in a kind of a subservient role. It was a little bit disheartening to me.
Yeah.
That people would do that in that situation. And that early on in the game, right? Like, they definitely established their aggressiveness. Like, it's the first 3 days of the game. Chill out. Like they said, like, you're freaking out, dude, or like you're being paranoid. And he was.
Now, Dr. Mike talked about how his son told him, Dad, when you go out there, make sure you look for the idol. Dr. Mike, big Survivor fan, watches it with his family, and his son told him, go look for the idol. That son, I believe, is I'm talking about the same one, is named Ethan after you. And actually, Dr. Mike, in his CBS bio, told the story about how his wife had a hall pass, and that hall pass was for one winner of Survivor Africa, Ethan's on. And not only that, they knew where you lived, and they actually lived nearby. So what is your reaction to this story? Is it flattering? Were you disturbed that people were keeping track of where you were living?
My wife's yelling, it's not going to happen.
We're not talking about your hall pass.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. I think it's pretty, I don't know. It's pretty weird, to be honest. You know, it was fun.
What's the weirdest part of this story?
The weirdest part of this story is that, that like kind of we passed each other every day, and he must have been looking at me. I think he said in this video, of course, once I heard the news, I watched it. He's like, and I was just happy that the kid actually looked like me and it didn't look like Ethan. So like, I guess, you know, he was questioning at a moment, you know, but I guess it's a pretty cool honor, you know, it's they must have watched the show, enjoyed watching the show, enjoyed, you know, the way I appeared on the show. And, I don't know if he's making the whole thing up, but
I don't think so. I mean, it seems like that there really is a kid.
The real Ethan Z.
The real Ethan Z. So we did some research here about this. The idea of was there a spike in popularity of the name Ethan after you played in Survivor, and the esteemed Will from America crunched some numbers on this, and it looks as though that there was some popularity for the name Ethan in the 90s, but then in 2000, it rose to 7.3 in 1,000 boys were named Ethan. But then in 2002... it rose to the all-time peak of 10.7 in 1,000 boys were named Ethan, until falling back below 10 in every 1,000 by 2006.
Wow. There was a spike in Ethan.
Yes.
After Survivor 3. Wow. Interesting.
Yes.
I think I'll try to track down. And that's my next TV show. I'm tracking down all the Ethans born 2 and 3. And I'm going to kind of just talk to everyone.
Okay. Well, good. That'll be the first season, because we also tracked the spike in Colbys in the early 2000s. Because prior to 2000, 0.7 boys in 1,000. Okay, so 0.7 kids out of 1,000 boys were named Colby. But then by 2001, 1.87 boys in 1,000 were named Colby. So that was triple the number of Colbys being born. And then by 2005, it falls off. So somewhere that there are all these classes with Ethans and Colbys in them.
That's crazy to think about. Thank you for doing that research,
yes,
by the way.
Yes.
That's fascinating information.
Now, I have never been told that there is a child named Rob, not even my own kids, that were named after me. And not even, this is my kid Rob, and he's named after Rob Mariano. Never heard that either.
I don't know if anyone named their kid after Rob Mariano.
No, not yet. Not yet. But have you ever met any other kids that were named Ethan after you?
To be honest, yes, I have.
Yes.
You know, they're, you know, like, you know, after the show, and you appreciate this, it was pretty crazy in the day, you know, and the reach of the television show Survivor happened to be a lot bigger. So I think the pool was bigger. But yes, there were some letters sent to me saying I named my kid after you, blah, 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 blah. But so I don't know if I've met anyone in person that, right, you know, was named after me, and they mentioned that, but definitely through the interweb and letters, I have heard that before. Yes. Yeah.
So what would the reaction be? So then when you these kids are going to start growing up, then what do you meet when you meet them? Do you take a picture with them, or does the kid not even care who you are because the kid wasn't watching Survivor?
It's a little like the kid doesn't even care. I think it's more about the parents. The parents care. I was actually funny. I actually went on a trip in to the Philippines with Jeanne.
Yes.
Back when, you know, people enjoyed having us come to different countries. And it was crazy because there's two different sets of parents in the Philippines that brought their baby to me with a birth certificate. And I have pictures to prove it that said, you know, some Filipino name, Ethan, and then the Filipino last name. It was just kind of weird in that situation.
Well, we don't even have the stats on the Filipino babies.
Yeah, you know, you got to leave the country and get the real stats.
All right. We don't have the stats for Ethans around the globe. We talked a lot last night on the Know-It-Alls about this idea of, okay, there was this idol that could have been used by Chrissy, and potentially she could have saved Katrina. Did you have any thoughts on the way that this idol was used?
You know, I thought it was an interesting, you know...
Or not used, I should say.
I was a little bit, I was actually confused at why, when I saw the final votes at the end, she actually voted to vote that woman out.
Right.
So it makes sense that she didn't use the idol, but I couldn't really figure out why she voted that woman out.
Yeah, the show, I don't think, did a great job of explaining what was going on. I did my exit interview with Katrina this morning, and I asked her about this, and she referred to Chrissy as saying, oh, she wanted to get rid of me the whole time. And it seems like that the mom alliance wasn't actually that much of a thing.
No, I remember kind of actually in Survivor Amazon early on the all girls tribe, there was a separation between the old, you know, the old ugly women and the young fit women. I don't know who was leading that charge, but it felt a little bit similar. Like, you know, the older, you know, mom women, I figure she might not want to be categorized in that area because that is a target. So she might have felt that she was being labeled as an older mom like woman and probably needed to side with the kind of younger, fitter crowd. That's the only thing that I was thinking.
Yeah. According to what Katrina said in her interview with me, she felt like that maybe Chrissy wanted to separate herself. And she said, okay, well, if we're going to get rid of one of the older people in the tribe, let's let it be her and not have everybody come for me here.
Yes. That makes perfect sense to
okay.
me. You know, and then I try to think about who she would have used that idol on, or why Alan didn't kind of push his agenda a little bit further and try to kind of separate JP and Ashley. Cause that was his whole thing, right? Like he said they were stronger together and he wanted to separate them. And he had this whole big, you know, paranoia against them, but yet he kind of seemed like he just kind of went along with the crowd and just voted off that older woman.
Now, Ethan, I have a question for you from one of our listeners and great friend of the podcast. Mike Bloom wants to ask you that in both of your seasons, Ethan, the first boot, you were there. You went to the tribal council the first time out, both seasons that you played, and both time a woman in her 40s ended up leaving, but for very different reasons, as was the case last night. Do you see any similarities between the three people in question, Diane, Tina, and Katrina?
Well, Diane is a whole different story. I mean, she, she didn't perform well in challenges. She was a little bit needy. If you remember, her and Clarence had a little situation with, you know, the cherries stealing food. So at that point, it was an easy, you know, that early on in the game, everyone is kind of looking for the easy target and no one wants to ruffle any feathers too quickly back in Survivor Africa. So Diane was a pretty easy choice. Tina, you know, that in that situation, I was just kind of happy it wasn't me. There was a underlying theme amongst all the players, like, let's get the winners off first. No one wants a winner to win again. If you remember, this was the first time they brought back returning players. This is the first time they brought back winners.
I recall, yes.
You recall, yeah. I think you were there
for a minute.
So, yeah, you know, like they, you know, that no one at that stage of the, you know, that early on in the trajectory of Survivor, it was just a different philosophy. And, you know, if you won once, they wanted you off again. And that happened with you. You were the greatest player to never win Survivor. That is your title. So everyone gunned for you early on. You know what that was like.
Yes.
And so I think they were just different situations. So voting off Tina was an easy vote, an easy target. Okay. And then this last night. Yeah. So I guess I don't see a similarity. I think it's just, you're just looking for something. And she was an easy target. Maybe didn't mesh with everyone else as well as she could have.
Okay. Clayton O'Dell has this question for you. If you had this hypothetical super idol in the All-Stars, okay, put yourself back there at that Saboga first tribal council, would you have played it on Tina to keep her in the game? Or would you have held on to it and now you have this fake idol souvenir that you could potentially play later on in the game and trick people into thinking you have a real idol?
Wow, that's a very good question. I at that stage of the game, I probably would have. I mean, Tina was an alliance of mine early on because we were the only winners. So she was kind of my only alliance. So yeah. I probably would have tried to keep Tina around because the rest of the players on my tribe I didn't necessarily feel comfortable with. I had Jerry, I had Rupert, I had Jenna Lewis, I had Rudy. And, you know, for me, it was a friend and an alliance, and I trusted her in the game at that moment.
Yeah, a little bit of a different story between you two and then Chrissy and Katrina, considering that it doesn't seem like Chrissy even liked Katrina. So it definitely would have made more sense for you than for Chrissy to play that idol last night.
Right. And don't forget, I don't even know if I would have anticipated keeping. I think you had to play the idol. You know, I think this kid had to play the idol. But I think I don't know if I would have anticipated keeping the idol and using it as a fake idol later on in the game.
Yeah.
You know, because that just wasn't that didn't go through people's minds at the time, or it wouldn't have gone through my mind.
Sure. I mean, the hidden immunity idol wouldn't have gone through anybody's mind at the time. It wasn't even invented yet.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So,
I mean, let's think about, Ryan, that, the turtleneck guy, like he was the last one to leave the boat after Jeff said, leave the boat, or the second to last one. You know, he probably knew there was an idol someplace on the boat, and that was smart. Like, and what shocked me is when Joe was kind of like he's like kind of blaming Mike Z for looking for the idol. Like it's a bad thing. Like looking for the idol. How? I know you were looking for the idol. Everyone knows you were looking for the idol. Like, why is that a bad thing? Like, that's the game of Survivor. I would hope you would look for an idol at any spare moment of time. And, in some seasons in the past, people actually, they're like, I'm going to go look for the idol, like, because you got to do it if it's your lifeline.
Yeah, so I feel like that certainly that's not a bad thing that Mike's looking for the idol. But I thought that Joe was trying to paint the target preemptively on Mike, where if we go to this first tribal council, I want to have a guy right now that we know is going to be this early first boot for the group.
Yeah, I guess you're right. And he might seem like a little bit of an easy target. Yeah.
Yeah. And Joe singled him out. Do you like Joe?
I don't. He reminds me a little bit of Tony, of course, probably by the way he looked, and it's his aggressive behavior. And he's he's a probation officer. I don't know what. So, he's coming to people with a strategy of kind of catching them in a lie or trying to twist their words to, make them, feel a little bit uneasy. So it's a strategy that, I don't necessarily think would fit with the way I play the game, but it's interesting to see, how he's going to play. It's like, I'm a healer. I have a big heart and people think I have a big heart, yet, I'm kind of an evil guy too. So I think that's an interesting dynamic, and it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah. I thought that with being on the healers tribe, that he was the one person saying like, oh great, I'm on the tribe with the healers. They have a big heart. I can take advantage of them because they're going to be very open hearted with me. And that plays into my hand.
Yeah. I think that's smart, right? That's pretty smart.
Yeah. But can he go far? Because how much can he do in the game before people start to recognize him as Tony, when in the previous season, actual Tony got voted out a second time because they said, okay, well, we can't have Tony around.
Right. Yeah. I don't know how far he can go. I mean, he's reminding me, Alan and Joe are kind of playing a similar game right now. They're kind of, Alan's like, I'm going to play this game like a full on sprint. He was playing hard. Joe was playing hard. So I don't know how that's going to work out, knowing, coming into the game with 35 seasons under your belt to watch and analyze is, it's really interesting. It's a change, people talk about this all the time, but it really changes the game and how you play. And people probably in their minds are thinking, all right, well, that's how Tony played and he got voted out. I can't play like that. So I got to play like this. So I don't know how long that can last. And you're going to mix up the tribes any moment, you can't keep these tribes, three tribes together that long.
Now, I know you've often talked about how the actual conditions for the survivors are a lot easier now than they were in the early days of the game. But do you prefer the faster paced game, or do you feel like that the older game was actually better than how it is now?
It's a hard question to answer. I'm a little bit biased just because I've only played one way. Mm-hmm. Played in a way that, is a slower paced game where, relationships mattered more and the long-term goals were, more important, I think, than they are now, where people valued loyalty and hardworking and trust. That was just the values that were part of the the game that, you know, we played early on. You know, I think it's not better or worse. I just think it's different. I think it's there are so many factors in the game that you now have to juggle. It seems like it could be a little bit more difficult to manage, to be honest. You know, there are so many ways that just random things happen all the time where it's very unpredictable. And a game that's unpredictable is harder to play. And that's kind of why I feel, you know, just, you know, this is the first episode. I'm thinking a hustler might win this thing, just because if you think of kind of what a hustler does, you know, they're adaptable. They're willing to suck it up and do whatever they have to do. You know, look at the girl, Allie, you know, she's a personal assistant. I'm sure she's had to do some pretty crappy stuff, get coffee, get laundry, you know, do this, pick up dog poop. Like there's humanity.
Dog poop. Oh no.
I don't know. But, you know, you think like you got to be, this game is all about adaptability and yeah. You got to be able to, you know, have a couple different plans under your belt. And maybe a hustler is a person who's able to bob and weave and roll and adapt easier than some of the other people.
Right. That sounds to me like the Survivor All-Stars version of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
Definitely. Yeah. Survivor Africa, I was lucky in the sense that I aligned with a bunch of people that I could trust and I felt I could trust. And we went to the end of the game together. I'm talking about Lex, Tom, Kim Johnson, you know, All-Stars. I was in a totally different, I started at the bottom and definitely was scrambling at every moment of every second of the game, because like I said, winners were targeted and no one wanted me there. And I was on a tribe that wasn't winning. I went to every single tribal council except one in All-Stars. I don't know when I got voted off, or eighth or day 21 or 22. The last of all the winners, I'd like to put that out there. But yeah, it was a totally different game. And I obviously much prefer the first one than the second one.
But I feel like you don't get enough credit for the second time around, because I think that, and I have done a full rewatch of all of this in the last couple of years. That's the kind of time I have on my hands, Ethan. And I feel like that was a really impressive run in the All-Stars.
Well, thank you, Rob. Yeah. Yes. I think people forgot about that moment.
Yes. See, I hope that people forget about the All-Stars.
Yes, that's my goal. Like, I didn't want to come on this show because I didn't want people to think about the All-Stars.
Yeah.
But that was the first time we had three tribes, if you remember.
Yes.
And, then they merged, once they merged the tribes, I was being put in a more horrible situation than I was, in my original tribe.
Yes.
When you play with people that, so that's, I just want to put out there, I think the game of Survivor is best when it's with strangers. Mm-hmm. I know everyone enjoys seeing people come back and seeing how they play, but I think the game is designed for strangers. And I think that's when you get the kind of the best results from a, fan perspective.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are on board with that, especially after we had a season last season in Game Changers that reminded a lot of people of Survivor All-Stars. Were you thinking that at all watching Survivor Game Changers?
Yeah, I definitely was. Yeah, I feel it was easily, the extra, you just really put, it was very difficult to plan. You had to play, it was almost like a 3-day game. It was just tribal council to tribal council to tribal council. And your only strategy was kind of to make it to the next tribal council and then just start fresh and reevaluate. So I think that, that's a hard game to play. It's a really hard game to play.
Okay. Do you have any standouts from this group other than some of the people that we've talked about?
I like Ryan.
Yes.
For some reason, he's obviously funny. I think he's got a good strategic mind. When he stayed back, he noticed, Devon or Devon, looked like, he knows himself well and he knows who he needs to align with in order to get further in the game. He seems like he might, Ryan's not a big physical threat. He is more strategic, so he might need someone who's strong and gregarious and people want to be around, and he might need to align with a person like that. It reminded me a little bit of like David from a couple seasons ago.
Yeah.
And then the physical therapist, I forget her name. I think she was on the, she was on the Healers tribe.
Desi?
I thought she looked Desi, yes. You know, we didn't see much of her, but, you know, she seemed, when she was working with Mike on that, on the challenge, and they're trying to get the ball down that alley, you know, they were calm, they're collective, they're communicating well together. She's a physical therapist. You know, she's kind of used to communicating well. She's used to talking to people. She's patient. She's, you know, physical therapy, slow and steady wins the race in that, you know, in that profession. So I feel like she might be looking at the big picture. She's easy to be around, it seems like. So I don't know. I'm kind of leaning towards her a little bit too.
Ethan, were you surprised that the tribes botched the order of which maze to pick?
Yeah. You know, you guys talking, you know, with my wife Lisa about that. Like, I was, yeah, I couldn't understand why they went, the tribe picked the most difficult puzzle as their puzzle of choice, the blue tribe. And it was all, I think it was what looked familiar to them based on past Survivor seasons. So they might have been like, oh, let's go with this one. But the easiest puzzle, you know, whatever maze thing, was the yellow one, where it was just one single alley right down the middle.
Right. And while it seemed like the ball could fall out of that pretty easily, it was like, okay, so if it falls out, no big deal. Like, you lost 10 seconds with trying to roll the thing down the hill. Whereas the maze that the Heroes tribe picked out, like, if you got your ball like 2/3 of the way through, then there were like a couple of parts where you did have to like sort of like maneuver around an edge. Your ball falls out there. You wasted 15 minutes getting to that point. So really, the one that was just the straight shot was, you know, you could have tried it, you know, 30 times and you probably would have gotten it in faster than trying to get through the other mazes once.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you think, you know, in any sports analogy, which I'll make, it's the KISS method. Keep it simple, stupid, right? The easiest way between two points is a straight line. So, and the quickest way is a straight line. So like, go with the easiest thing. If it looks easy, it probably might be a little bit easier than the other ones.
Yes. Easy, like the easy crunch bowl. That I was thinking about that the other day, Ethan, that I had some very soggy cereal and I felt like I could have used one of those.
I know, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, they're out of production at the moment.
All right, well, maybe it'll come back. You know, that was a pre-Kickstarter world that you invented that. Could you talk about that for any listeners that don't know what we're talking about?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that was a big moment for me. The you know, back in the day on Survivor, you filled out kind of a questionnaire of like your passions and your hobbies and stuff like that. And I put I'm an inventor, because you never really think someone's going to call guard on it. So you get off the show. My first appearance back day was I got to go on David Letterman, right? Big, huge deal. First question he asked me is like, so what have you invented? So like right there on David Letterman, I'm like, I invented a cereal bowl that keeps your cereal crunchy all day long. And I'm like, if you imagine a swimming pool, swimming pool's got a shallow end and it's got a deep end. So you keep your cereal up on the shallow end, you put your milk in the deep end. And when you want a little crunch, you just tap it over the edge. And since then, and then the crunch bowl was born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I remember you like on the like CBS morning show with it. Like it was like a real thing.
It was a real thing. I went on... I got to go on Pitch Men with Anthony Sullivan and Billy Mays. And they produced
the late, great Billy Mays.
Yes, the late great Billy Mays. And this was like pre Shark Tank. You know, this was the first incarnation of this circa 2008, 2007.
Did the Crunch Bowl also have a straw that you could drink the milk? Am I remembering that right?
It was a stroon. It was a spoon where the shaft of the spoon was actually a straw. So you could dip your spoon into the milk, yet you could sip it through the edge of the straw. So it was a Crunch Bowl and a stroon.
Now, is it possible the world wasn't ready for that yet in 2005 and the world of 2017 is ready for it?
It is. Unfortunately, there has been multiple competitors that have squashed anything I ever imagined of doing the Crunch Bowl. There's a thing called the O Bowl, and it's sold at Brookstone, and got decimated.
Oh, no. All right. Well, sorry to hear about that, Ethan.
It's okay. Thank you.
Now, how much does it piss you off when you watch this show and you see these survivors in beautiful Fiji, in crystal clear blue water, with so many cantaloupe they can't even carry them trying to get onto the boat? How much does that make you angry after playing in Africa?
Well, Rob, you really know I push my butt. Frustrates me in only in the sense that, one, it's the game of Survivor. It's not the game of I'm uncomfortable for 39 days. Like, there are no – you need zero survival skills to actually be on the show Survivor anymore. I personally feel that way. All you need to be able to do is be uncomfortable for an extended period of time, go a little bit hungry, and kind of that's about it. That's how I feel personally. Like, and for someone like myself and a lot of players, the Colbys, the 0.7 out of 1,000 people back in the day, like being able to survive and being able to thrive under those circumstances and be part of the tribe and find your place in the tribe through survival techniques is an asset to a lot of people. And a lot of the reason some of those people can get further in the game, when you remove that from the game, then it kind of just removes one of someone's skill set. If you think about it. So I personally felt I did better at the survival stuff, at the challenge stuff. You know, that was where I did well in the game. And then now, and like getting water and building fire and building shelter, you don't really need to do that anymore because I feel they provide you with shelter materials. They actually started the game this season with giving you fire. That's never happened before.
Yeah.
Back in the day, if you did a fire with no matches, it was like the hero moment of the entire season of Survivor. And now they just kind of hand you fire when you show up. Yeah. And as you know, the biggest thing in the game is fire is life. Like, you have to all vote someone earlier on. You have to vote someone off in order to get the right and have the honor to get fire in return for voting someone out of your tribe. That was part of it.
You know, now we have a lot of listeners who came on board with Survivor in like the, you know, Middle Ages and maybe haven't gone back and watched all of the older seasons. Can you just describe what the living conditions were like for you guys in Survivor Africa?
Sure. I mean, I personally feel Survivor Africa was a difficult very difficult environmentally speaking.
And it's just unique that there's no other season that has like this similar sort of setup.
Yeah, it was early on in the season. It was the third season. There's no body of water to hang out in. There was no area to actually retrieve water. So we literally had to walk 45 minutes to a water source, which was a trickling stream that we shared with everyone else out there. Elephants, giraffes, you know, Cape Buffalo. So sometimes we would get there and we'd have to wait until they actually left the area so we could go in and get our water. And they would leave, elephants would leave giant piles of shit that were like up to like giant, like circus elephant dumps full of poop that we would brush away with our hands. And yeah, then we would dig a hole so we could let the stream fill up the hole. And then we'd put our canteens in there and then we'd have to walk back to the camp. We'd have to filter it through a t-shirt. We'd have to boil it for 5 minutes. Then we'd have to let it cool, and then we could drink it. Mm-hmm. And now they just go to a well, and the water doesn't need to be purified or boiled or anything. You just go to a well with like Poland Springs bottles of water in there. And that's frustrating to me.
Yeah. Do you feel like that the hardships that the survivors would have to go through, especially like you go through an experience with these people that are in your group, and then, you know, you're also in a war against this other group of people. Do you think that that sort of fed into the idea of people sticking together as opposed to now you say everybody is comfortable? Maybe there's not that sort of kinship of being sort of like a band of brothers and sisters working together against the elements. And so people feel like less connected to the people that they're with.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think you nailed it. You know, I just think personal relationship. In the end of the game, Survivor is a game of relationships. I feel it's how you treat one another, how you act with one another that kind of determine how well and how far you go in the game. So when it comes down to the end, I think those personal relationships do matter. But it's kind of doesn't, you know, there was a real moral dilemma. I felt, at least, you played completely differently and you were kind of the first to play that way. But there was a real moral dilemma when I became friends with this person, and friendships based on trust, and you can't trust anyone. And now all of a sudden I have to vote my friend off. Mm-hmm. That's the game I thought got exciting. And that's when I felt the viewers were like, oh my God, he's going to like vote off his best friend out there. What's going to happen? Like, I think that was exciting for people. Now it doesn't matter. People go in there not expecting to make friends. They don't want to make friends. They kind of trust doesn't matter. People are breaking trust left and right. There's, you know, everyone just wants a blind side. You have to make big moves. I didn't necessarily get that feeling when we played in Africa, or not as even much on All Stars.
Now,
I don't know if you agree or not.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely understand what you're saying. And you know, I was listening to some of my recording that I had done about talking about Survivor Africa in when we went back and did the rewatch. And, you know, I do feel like that the end of that season is particularly compelling because there's a lot of like, oh, OK, well, is, you know, are Ethan and Tom going to turn their back on Lex? And Lex is obviously very concerned about that. And Kim is stirring the pot. And even though it was just like a couple of people, not necessarily like that there were big swings going on, there was a lot of drama that came out of that.
It's just a different game. Like I said, it's not better or worse. It's just different. It's just as exciting. I love watching it. You know, obviously you put yourself out there and say, what would I do in this situation? And I'm sure a lot of the fans do that as well. And that's what makes it so exciting. But I think the personal relationships in terms of trust and loyalty, it doesn't matter. I feel like it's more like, it's kind of like, I think this is, I feel Survivor is a little bit like Big Brother, but you're just on an island with no food. It's a lot of strategy. It's a lot of gameplay. It's fast paced. It's moving. There's so many tricks that are thrown in there with the idols and the secret idols and the after the game idols and extra food here. And, you know, freaking Cochran comes back and talks to someone
yeah.
in the middle of a boat to give him advice. Like, Cochran's giving someone advice. I don't know. It's just weird. Like, what's going on here?
That is weird. That is weird that they did that. How close have you and Tom and Lex remained over the years?
Lex and Tom and I have remained very close friends. I would definitely say so. I got married this past summer to my wife, Lisa.
Mazel Tov.
Thank you. Thank you. And they were both at the wedding, which was nice. You know, so they were there to celebrate with us as well. So they are definitely good friends of mine.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you, Rob.
Yes.
When Jeff Probst randomly said, and I just want to let everyone know, tie votes are back in action.
Yes.
What does that mean? Like, were they never not in action?
So last season in Survivor Game Changers, they had an announcement that it was going to be that tie votes were, there was going to be like no deliberation. So basically we go to a tribal council, 3 votes Ethan, 3 votes Rob. In a normal season, they would, okay, we're going to re-vote, okay? You have to vote for either Ethan or Rob at this tribal council. Last season, that would have immediately triggered a rock draw. So if it was 3 votes Ethan, 3 votes Rob, now we're immune. Everybody else has to go to rocks because there was a tie. It never came into play last season, so they ended up taking that rule away.
Gotcha. Okay.
Sort of like for one season, they tried something and they were like, this isn't working great. Let's go back to it. But let me ask you a tiebreaker related question. Jessica Frey wants to know, in Africa, tie votes were decided by previous votes and then Survivor trivia. Since the no tie vote is back this season, how do you think they should be deciding these tie votes, Ethan? Should they vote and then go to rocks, no tie vote and then straight up discussion and rocks, previous votes and a quiz, or should they bring back the survival trivia quiz?
I mean, I am always a big fan of make them do a challenge, like have them try to light a fire. I love when that was in the mix. And okay. I don't know if that came after, you know, taking a couple people out of it. But like if there's a tie and you're forcing the tie, hey, like make those people work for it. You know, make them both try to light fire and the winner stays and the loser goes. That's the way I would do it.
When you were in Africa and they told you about, okay, we got a new tiebreaker this season. You have to answer survival trivia questions. What was your reaction to that?
I mean, I thought it was a little bit silly in the sense that, like, you know, did I read a manual on like how to survive in the wilderness in like know everything? No. So it was kind of like very, you know, subjective type of trivia. And they probably, you know, it just didn't make sense.
Would you have been mad if you lost on a survival trivia question like Dr. Carl did?
Yes, I would. Yes, because for that such a high stakes game, something as simple as like, you know, what are the big five animals in, you know, Africa, like was, you know, a silly way to go out of the game.
Yeah. Okay.
I like how the game has evolved. The rock thing, you know, the rock thing I think is still pretty tough too. But, you know, I like the idea that they're trying to force people to make a decision right there on the spot. Last season was, you know, fantastic. And in the sense that people were making things happen at Tribal Council at the moment, like live. It was just crazy. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah. To go back to the Africa stuff, Randy wants to know, could you explain a little bit about the Boma and how that worked? Now, were you guys like trapped in there unless somebody came and let you out?
No. So the Boma, what they made us do is we had to create a circle of branches, and those branches were from the acacia tree, which had big thorns on them. So it was kind of like a protective fence from the actual animals that were a legitimate threat to us during Survivor Africa. You know, that's another thing that I think was a little bit different in Africa. I mean, Amazon had that problem too, but with the piranhas and stuff. But there was a legitimate threat to animals. We weren't locked in there, but, you know, they didn't want us leaving at night. We always had to have two fires at night going 20, you know, all night to keep the lions away. And, you know, it was above 10 feet high, I'd like to say. So, you know, I mean, and then they give you these Hollywood prop spears, you know, like they gave you these spears. And so, like, you're like, what is this going to do if a lion comes and gets me? Like, you know what lion killed you because it had something in his neck, but I'd be dead on the ground. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't think they actually did anything, the Boma. But, yeah, we had to make that. Like, there was a lot of work that went involved with, you know, getting our camp up and running. You know, we built a little stove. I think we won, or we were given a big pile of cow dung, which we mixed with mud to make, you know, walls of a stove. You know, we had to go and get our own firewood. We had no food, really, no water. So it was very rustic compared to what it looks like today.
Yeah. How close would the wildlife get to the Boma?
It got close. There were multiple nights that the lions would literally be walking around, pacing around. You could hear them. You could hear them breathe. You could hear them roar. At times it was definitely, I was a little bit nervous in the sense that, you know, I knew they probably wouldn't let me die or let anyone die. And they said there were guys with guns out there.
Probably, right?
Probably. You know, I knew it would make really good TV.
Yeah.
But you never really saw those guys with guns that they said were out there. But, you know, you got to imagine they were have us protected. But I don't know.
Yeah. Ethan, something else that you don't get credit for was that you guys, after the first twist in Survivor history, when they ended up doing the first tribe swap, that you and Kim Johnson were part of the group that threw a challenge for the first time successfully to get somebody out of the game. Is this an inaccurate claim?
It is not an inaccurate claim, and I'm very impressed that you remembered that. But yeah, that was, for all I remember, it was the first time any tribe has purposely lost a challenge in order to get someone out. And we did this. It was a big puzzle challenge to get Silas out.
Yes, and it went remarkably well. And there was, because everybody, you know, you have all these people saying like, never under any circumstances throw a challenge. Well, the first time anybody ever thought to have a challenge thrown so you can go to tribal council, it worked out pretty well.
Correct. Yes. Silas was the other, I guess, he was the leader from the other tribe. He was kind of directing what was going on with Lindsay and Little Kim and Brandon. And then they flopped and they switched. And so all of a sudden, you know, Silas is in our tribe, and like we couldn't have myself and Silas there because it just wouldn't work out. I didn't trust him. I knew he had aligned with people back at his old tribe, and I just imagine once we merged, we'd come back together. So we could not have him there. You know, and morally, as an athlete, you know, a former soccer player my whole life, the concept of losing on purpose was a little bit challenging for me, but you got to think of the big picture. And it worked out well in our favor. And if you watch the challenge,
yeah,
you know, Silas is like running all over the place, trying to make this work, looking around like, what's going on?
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a tough, that was a big moment.
Now, I don't remember in terms of the episode if you guys were sort of like premeditating this and talking about it. Was it something that you guys told the producers, like, hey, well, I think we're going to go into this challenge and we're going to throw it? Or were you afraid that they were going to say, like, no, you can't do that?
Yeah, I don't think we made it obvious to the producers,
yeah,
if I remember correctly. Yeah. Because, yeah, you just never know what, you know, if that would have, yeah, what would have happened. If
it's one of those things where you're better off to ask forgiveness instead of permission if they come back and say, oh, no, you can't do that.
Right. Because, I mean, there are really no rules in Survivor, yet you never know if you do something, if, you know, shunned or looked down upon, or it's going to be a good thing. That's what makes Survivor so exciting.
Yeah. And we'll see if there are future challenge throws going on in this season. And they really should call that what do you want to call that maneuver? You should have named it.
Oh, man. I love naming things, too.
Easy crunch ball.
Right. I don't know. We can take suggestions from your viewers. Okay.
That's.
But, you know, I was always, you know, one of my first initial thought was when Ryan got that secret thing. He's like, okay, is he going to throw this challenge to be able to use his power at tribal council if he loses on purpose? You know, that definitely could have gone that way. His tribe, you know, Ryan, the turtleneck guy in this current season, you know, he could have easily tried to throw the challenge and then therefore be able to use his secret idol that night.
Yeah.
So that a decent strategy, maybe. Probably too early in the game to do that.
Maybe too early, but I think he's also superstitious because he talked about in some of his preseason interviews that the winner of many of the seasons, especially there's, I think, a long streak, they don't go to tribal council first and they certainly don't go often. And that was certainly not the case for you in Survivor Africa when you were at that first tribal council.
Correct.
So some point along the way, I know that Rich was at the first tribal council. Tina wasn't. I think Vesepio was. So maybe at some point the worm turned.
Yeah, I guess so.
The trend reversed. The Earth's axis just flipped around at some point. Reverse polarity on winners going to the first tribal council. This is a good question. This is from Fran Bernstein, who wants to know, as a cancer survivor myself, I want to know how you're doing. And I also want to ask if you would ever do another season of Survivor. Ethan, do you know, are you medically cleared to ever participate in a Survivor season again?
I don't know if I'm medically cleared. I would definitely have to go see a doctor to be, you know, 100% sure if I'd be medically cleared. I've done some pretty kind of you know, big, you know, physical things since, you know, surviving cancer.
Yeah.
But I think it's just a whole different game. You are totally putting yourself in a really horrible situation.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'd ever do it again. You know, I can't imagine.
Nowadays, Ethan, it's really, you know, probably like a minor inconvenience. It's if you did Eco Challenge.
That is true. And the if I did Kill Reality.
Yeah, that was much tougher conditions along the way. I had a question for you. What was harder, Survivor Africa or being in the Scorn?
Well, I did get killed with a fishbowl. So I think, you know, the Scorn was wonderful experience. But living in the house with some of the other former Survivor contestants that will shall not be named was very challenging. the little gifts of,
yes,
of
a, yes. Yeah. Yes, I always felt badly because I felt like that you did not enjoy your experience with being part of the production.
It was a learning experience. I'm all about putting myself in uncomfortable situations in order to help myself grow.
Yes, but you were, and if people don't know what we're even talking about, that in 2005, I was part of a team that put together a reality show about reality stars making a movie, and Ethan had a big part in the movie, and you really threw yourself into the role. I was very impressed with your work in the film, Ethan.
Thank you. It was very, I played a character named Murray Ellis. If people are familiar with the MTV Monopoly.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
So I was Murray Ellis, and I was a clairvoyant.
Homeless person? Like some sort of a vagrant?
A vagrant. Who, I think you wrote that role for Rupert.
It's possible. And he passed.
And he passed on the role.
No, thank you.
Oh, but yeah, if anyone is interested in a fun night, go rent.
I think it's available on Amazon.com for less than $2 at this point. I think you'll pay more for the shipping, I think, than for the actual DVD.
You don't have 1,000 of those CDs.
No, I don't even know if I have one. Okay, Ori Kohav wants to ask you, did Alan's confrontation in any way remind you of when Lex was questioning T-Bird about the extra vote and thought it was Kelly?
Interesting. Yeah, very good.
Well, thank goodness Lex didn't tell anybody to take their clothes off.
No, he didn't. And this, I mean, yeah, I don't think there's many people on our season that want to see with their clothes off. Although, if you remember later in the season, Kim Johnson,
yes,
getting her G-string underwear. Yeah,
why did she have that?
The challenge was he had to create a SOS signal that could be seen from above, and the tribe that had the best, you know, come save me signal would get a delivery of something, or remember what it was. But anyway, we needed all our clothes. Everyone took off all their clothes, and she was in a G-string and bra.
Yeah, why did she have that though? That was so bizarre.
Right. Like, of all choices of underwear to wear in the show Survivor, I probably would have chosen something a little more durable.
Right. And I remember Big Tom was like, oh, hell, Kim has got a G-string bathing suit.
Right. Meanwhile, he took a feather and he put that feather someplace that...
Very inappropriate. Very inappropriate. Yeah. I had a question from somebody who wanted to know if Big Tom would be good at hiding the idol there, because that's where he was able to hide that feather.
Probably. Depends how big the idol is.
Yeah, that didn't make the cut, that question. Ariel wants to know, she says that this is a little bit of a heavy question, but if she remembers correctly, that the premiere of Survivor Africa aired about a month after the events of 9/11, she wants to know about what was happening in American history at the time affected your experience with the airing of the season. Can you talk through that a little bit? That if I recall correctly, you guys filmed the season pre 9/11, and then the release of the show ended up getting really impacted by 9/11. Can you just talk about going through that whole process and then having the obvious 9/11 tragedy in the middle of when you shot it and when it aired?
Sure. We finished filming Survivor Africa at the end of August in 2001. And so we returned the end of August. I was actually living in New York City at the time on 23rd Street, where I'd pass Mike Z all the time. Mm-hmm. And 9/11 happened, you know, as you meant, like 12, 13 days after we returned home from filming the show. And it was definitely an interesting situation in the sense that the term survivor,
right,
and survival had a lot more meaning for obvious reasons than it did in previous years. I think they delayed the premiere of the show, I think for a close to a month. And I think the actual premiere of the show was delayed because the president of the United States was giving a speech. on that like Thursday night. So it should have started at, say, 8 p.m. It started at 8:45 or 9 because of what was happening. So it was, I think people and fans didn't necessarily want to see people suffer. They didn't want to see people struggle and the kind of the negative side of things. So it was interesting that the way the show played out, you know, it was definitely a lot about like friendship and trustworthy and that type of stuff. You know, I can't say it was the most like cutthroat, dramatic, you know, crazy season of Survivor, because I think they paid a little more attention on developing the characters and the friendship and the loyalty and the trust and the and that stuff was kind of just what made sense with what was going on in the world and the history of that time. And if you look at what's happened with Survivor, you know, in even today's day and like what's, you know, the internet wasn't even really around when we were kind of like on the show Survivor. There weren't people talking about it in that sense. There's a few chat rooms, but now, you know, people play the game knowing kind of what's going to be shown on TV. And they're playing a little bit for, hashtag that they might get, you know, I think it was last season, one of the players, I forget who it was, like she was sitting there at tribal council saying, "Oh my God, I think I just got a hashtag." Like, you know, like mm-hmm. That's kind of weird. Back in the day, we just kind of played to play the game Survivor and to win the show Survivor, weren't necessarily thinking about kind of, you know, if we're going to be asked back again, or if we're going to get our own hashtag, or if it's going to be, you know, go viral, or if, you know, something along those lines. So I think just the way the game's played and is a good, it shows kind of what's going on in the world as well.
Yeah. Really interesting, you know, historical note. And of course, you know, the show was like the biggest phenomenon, you know, in the country at the time that the Australian Outback happened. And then, of course, after 9/11, you know, people are very fixated on all of that. I'm sure that, you know, selfishly for you guys that were in that cast, I'm sure that must have been like, okay, well, those people that were on Survivor, the Australian Outback, were really like superstars for the months that followed that show. And then I think that people, the viewers, ended up being like a lot more grounded in the actual reality of everything going on in the news than to pay attention to people that were contestants on a game show.
You nailed it. And I think it's also something that's kind of interesting to mention is the way that the show Survivor, I think people look forward to watching the show Survivor based on the location it was filmed. Like, you know, we were seeing a glimpse of what it was like in Africa. You know, it was kind of the first time where they kind of broke that third wall. And there was a moment where Lex and I got to visit the little town of Wamba and hang out with the people there. Lex ended up delivering HIV testing kits to this hospital in the middle of Kenya. Like, so you're kind of like bridging the gap between a reality show and real life situations and showing the world what it's like in other parts of the world and kind of opening their eyes to, you know, different cultures and foods and musics and, you know, history of different places around the world. Now, it's just a little bit different in the sense that, you know, they're in Fiji and they've been there the past two seasons. They're going to be here these two seasons. I think once again, it's, you know, they can't keep traveling all over the world doing Survivors. And obviously, you know, they got to pay attention to production costs. But, you know, that was something I think fans look forward to.
Yeah. Well, Felipe has a question for you to your fellow Lexingtonian. I was wondering if Ethan could speak about the impact of his experience in Africa and how it led to the charitable causes that he was a part of, specifically with grassroots soccer. Could you talk about some of the experiences that you've had now going back to Africa?
Sure. You know, I think some people may not know, but prior to Survivor Africa, I lived and played professional soccer in Zimbabwe. And so, you know, I had some experience being in the on the continent of Africa. Obviously, Kenya was different than Zimbabwe. But yeah, I had an experience on the show Survivor where I won a reward challenge where I won these two goats. I wasn't so happy about winning the goats, but Lex and I got to take these two little goats to this village of Wamba, like I was talking about.
Did you guys get a good deal on the goat?
So this is what happened. Like it was a real, like, and this is when people think Survivor isn't real. You know, literally, they gave us the goats. They drove us to this town and they just dropped it off. And I remember kind of getting off this truck with these two goats, kind of looking around for some guidance from the production or the producers. And they just turned their backs and they just wouldn't talk to us. They're like, you know, so we had to figure out like what to do, where to do, what. So we went door to door trying to sell these goats to get some money so we could buy some food. We ended up selling the goats to this guy. He literally walked 4 feet to a butcher. Yeah. Turned the goats into a butcher. But anyway, we got the food. We got the, you know, money for the goats. I think we got a decent deal. You know, Big Tom, who's a goat farmer, he was a little pissed that I didn't take him on that trip.
Yeah.
But strategically, it wasn't the right move. But anyway, so yeah, we got the goats, sold the goats, got some French fries. I ended up getting some severe diarrhea. And they definitely had fun showing that. And but anyway, before we left, we were just hanging out in the parking lot of this little Wamba hospital. I ended up playing soccer or hacky sack because back then we had luxury items. My luxury item was a hacky sack.
Yes.
So hacky sack with all these children. And it was a kind of at that moment I realized that, okay, I have the ability to be able to communicate with these kids through the sport that I love. When I got back from the show, I just kind of really wanted to do something positive. And so I teamed up with some soccer buddies of mine. And we co-founded a charity called Grassroots Soccer. And, you know, since that moment, we've now grown into an incredible organization where we are in 50 countries and we've graduated over 2 million kids from the program Grassroots Soccer, all because of the TV show Survivor.
Okay. And the contribution that you've made because of that, you know, what you've been able to do with your platform of the show. I remember when we were all at Hofstra University, it must have been like 2004 or something like that. I remember you were speaking to like the new kids that were coming into college, and you talked about how that you had heard Bono say, you know, what you can do with this platform, something like that. You know the line better than me, but, you know, it's really remarkable what you've been able to do.
Bono's note was, celebrity's a bit ridiculous, but it's currency. You've got to use what you got. And right. At that moment, the show was popular. I had a moment in time and I wanted to take advantage of it. And so I did it. I tried my best to do the best I could.
Just like you, that goat was currency that you turned into French fries. You've been able yeah. to convert that celebrity into something powerful that is giving less diarrhea to the world.
I completely agree.
Ron Chan wants to know, do you have a winner pick this season, Ethan?
You know, it's really early. I'm going to go back to Ryan. I don't know why it's so early. And then I'm going to go with the physical therapist. I forget her name again, but that's just a shot in the dark.
Okay.
You know, I think it's going to come from the hustlers. Why don't we put it that way? Lauren, the fisherman, she's, you know, looking pretty good right now. Allie, you know, the personal assistant, you know, she's, like I said, she's adaptable. She's got good humility. She looks like she's good with personal relationships, but you know, we've seen 60 minutes of this show. It's just tough to say.
Yeah. Now, would it change anything for you about your favorite player, Ryan, if I told you that he was a hardcore New York Giants football fan?
Yes, it would.
You're out on him now, right?
Yeah. He did say he wants to be the first person to win Survivor in a turtleneck. And I respect that. That's bold.
Okay. Ryan Hilliard wants to know, Ethan, if you have a son, what Survivor contestant will you name him after?
Oh, that's easy. I name him after Rob Cesternino.
No, come on. Stop. Stop. you're setting him up for a lifetime of, although he could very easily grow up to be the greatest Rob Cesternino.
Would he be a Mets fan? Well,
you should hope not. That's child abuse. Teach you grow up, raise your kids to be Mets fans. Be terrible.
I mean, it's, you know, I was very impressed with Zeke. You know, one, Zeke Zahn sounds really cool. Zeke Zahn. And I really was impressed with how Zeke handled himself last season. And I was pretty impressed. ZZ.
Wow.
Out can do like a little CZ Top thing going on.
Yeah. Okay. Laura Olson wants to know, have you considered filing a restraining order against Dr. Mike?
Oh, man. Not yet. You know, I don't know. Maybe, you know, you never know when I'm going to need a urologist. You know, I'm getting old. You know? be time. I mean, to go see him. So I need to keep him on my good side.
Boy, I mean, what a strange, you know, circle that would be to have. Okay, so ultimately that you are Mrs. Z's hall pass, then they have the son named after you, and then ultimately he becomes your urologist.
Right. Now that's a good TV show.
That's a good setup. Coming to CBS this fall.
The Z's.
Yeah. Trevor wants to know, what would you say is the biggest difference between being in a 6-person tribe and an 8-person tribe?
I think it's 2 people.
Yes.
I think the biggest difference, I think you're a lot more exposed with fewer people. If you are a strong personality, or a weak personality, the people on the fringes are noticed more. And I think it's it's easier to be exposed earlier on in the season, in the show.
Okay. This is a question from Dara, who wants to know, what do you think the chances are that both Joe and Alan could end up on the same tribe and eventually winding up in a strip off to prove who doesn't have the idol?
Wow, that would be interesting. Circa, you know, Survivor Amazon with some peanut butter and chocolate strip offs. I don't think
it's exactly the same.
Exactly the same. I can't wait for that moment. I'm actually hoping that they are on the same tribe at some point so they can get naked together.
Okay. Edward Morris wants to know, Ethan, seeing that there were several full All-Star seasons since the original All-Star seasons, do you feel like that being a former winner is no longer a reason to be targeted? And if so, does that make you happy or does that piss you off that it was a reason to vote people off back in the All-Stars?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's great that a winner can potentially go back on the show and there isn't a target against them. However, I still believe that, you know, people who have won for a reason. And I don't understand sometimes how the winners can get pretty far in the game. I still think it's a decent strategy to get them off early because they were good. And you sometimes want to get good players off early on. But I like that Sandra did, you know, fairly well. You know, Tina did well when she came back. You know, I don't know who else. Parvati did well when she came back every time. So I think it's I think now winners are often sometimes looked as an asset, which is great. You know, they do know how to play the game. Maybe we should keep them by our side a little bit longer. And they're students of the game. So I think it's a little bit of both. Like I said, the game, you need to be adaptable. And if a winner is there and can help you, then you saddle up with them. And if they can't, you got to get them off.
Okay. Ethan, going back to Survivor Africa's finale, were you upset when Bryant Gumbel referred to you as the winner of Survivor Africa, Ethan Zorn?
I was pretty upset about that. I remember it.
Tried so hard to find the clip right before we came on. It occurred to me like 10 minutes before we were going to do this interview. I'm like, I don't think I've ever heard Ethan talk about that. And I tried, and I actually went on CBS All Access and I tried to find the clip. And I think that whole segment, when he goes down the line and introduces everybody, I think that's no longer in the episode.
Oh no. Yeah. It's good.
You have to find the bootleg to find that.
I have it on VHS someplace.
I have it somewhere. Because I watched it a couple of years ago when I rewatched Africa, but it is not in the CBS All Access version.
Right. I think I actually on purpose, and if I can find it for you, I called him, yes, Brian Grumble after that. So right back at him, if you remember correctly. So I think it was a tit for tat. But yeah, it was pretty funny. My big moment, right? He called me Ethan Zorn. My family still makes fun of me for that.
Yeah. Ethan Zorn. Yeah. Was he just like checked out about Survivor at that point? Because that's the last one that he ultimately ended up hosting.
Yeah. Then they gave it to Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah.
The following year. I think, don't forget, it was like no one really knew what was going on with reality TV. Like they didn't know if they should like it or they shouldn't like it. He didn't know if it was like it was demeaning for his job to be hosting this, you know, or if this was the highlight of his career, you know. So like,
right.
No one really what was going on. It was kind of like still a real new phenomenon and kind of silly, but awesome at the same time. So
because he seemed into it at first, like it, like when we watched like the Borneo reunion, like he seemed into it. And then in Africa or in Australia, he's like kind of into it. But then he seems like he's pretty checked out by the time you get to Africa. And the only thing that he seems to pay attention to is all of the girls that like got naked in their audition tapes, where he just keeps talking about, I've got the tape of Lindsay in my trailer. So I've seen the whole unedited, uncensored tape. That's the one thing that he's not getting their names wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah. Ethan, are there any other thoughts that you have through one night of Survivor HHH?
Ooh, triple H&H bagel Survivor. You know, one thing I did notice was that JP and Ashley, I thought that was pretty funny because weren't they a couple on The Bachelor?
Oh. The Bachelor?
Yeah. So, and then there were a couple here on the show as well.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty ironic. No, you know, I think I love how, you know, I sometimes seem a little bit jaded on the show and old school versus new school. But, you know, it's I still love it. It's a great show. I think it's really exciting. I think what they do with the show, that just the cinematography and the, you know, the colors and the casting, I think they're always doing a great job and they're always keeping it exciting. And, you know, of course, I'm going to be biased towards old school stuff. But deep down in my heart, I think it's like the most perfect game on the planet. And I love that people are watching it again. And now I'm in a position where my nieces and nephews are old enough to actually be watching the show Survivor. So I get to hang out with them and watch a show. They've yet to watch my season because they think it's too boring. But it's fun to be able to kind of see this little revival in Survivor. And I just hope it keeps going forever.
Okay. Is there anything that you are going to be atoning for from this interview over the Yom Kippur holiday?
Yes. I don't know.
That's a long pause.
Well, I have a lot to atone for this year. No, but I would like to wish everyone a happy New Year, Lashana Tova.
Yes.
But I think, you know, Mike Z and his wife might have a little discussing to do, and they might have to atone for whatever hall passes they were talking about.
Yeah. Okay. Good to know. Ethan, do you have a hashtag that you want to give the listeners who've made it to the end of this interview?
Oh my God. You are true survivors if you made it to the end of this in this podcast. Hashtag true survivor. Rob has a podcast.
Okay, true survivor. Not Survivor HHH Bagels.
That's H and H and H. Yeah.
Survivor H and H and H Bagels. All right, I don't know how you make that work on the hashtag, but there you go. Ethan, of course, if you want to follow Ethan on social media, do you do a lot of tweeting?
You know, I try to dip in and dip out every now and then, but yeah, I do some tweeting.
Okay, every once in a while. What are you mostly tweeting about? Your real stuff, right?
Yeah, you know, Okay.
Well, check out Ethan's on Twitter at follow any other links about anything you're doing you want to give out.
You know, you can always just check out, you know, at Ethan's on my website, ezon.com, grassrootssoccer.org. The list goes on. Easycrunchbowl.com, whatever you want.
Easycrunchbowl. Yeah. Yeah. Check out Ethan's new speaking reel on ezon.com.
Sure. You can do that as well.
Yeah. You got a nice website. Very, very, very fancy. Well done.
Thank you.
Very well done. And Ethan, also, I just want to, give you some props again. Today is September 28th. That it is my dad's birthday. I always, appreciate that you and Jenna came to my dad's wake when he passed away a couple of years ago. That was incredible of you guys. You were at my wedding. So, what a treat it is to talk to you, Ethan.
I appreciate it, and it's been wonderful to remain friends for so many years, and these are the type of relationships that you remember after after the show that are the most meaningful. So I'm happy that we were on the show early on and we can remain friends, and it's awesome to follow your career and see how successful you've been, you know, on this reality TV stuff as well.
All right, Ethan, you take care, buddy. Okay.
All right, talk to you soon, Rob.
Okay, take care. All right, everybody, there you have it. Ethan Zahn here on the podcast. Great job by Ethan. Really fun to catch up with him. I do apologize that Ethan's connection was a little dodgy and at cutting in and out a little bit at times. Usually I have the ability to record a person's audio on their end, and the service that I use for that was down today. So we were a little bit limited to just connecting with Ethan over Skype. So I do apologize about that. But still, I hope that the quality of the content was there enough to help you get through some of the cutting in and out with Ethan's audio. So anyway, thank you guys so much for sticking with us for episode number one. Of course, our voicemail show is around the corner. Get your feedback in. RobHasAWebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. If you're in the Los Angeles area and can make it out to the Hollywood Improv this Thursday night, I will be there for the Survivor Match Game. I'm really excited about this. Any opportunity to pretend to be a game show host, I am so excited. We've got a great crew together for the Match Game. It's going to be myself, David Wright, Aris, Hannah, Aubrey, Nick Majorano, Zeke Smith. Should be very, very fun. Also, if you're interested in being a contestant, that we are going to be taking people from the crowd to participate in the show. If you are interested in competing as one of the contestants on the Match Game, where you will try to match up questions with the Survivor panel, you can email me, matchgame@robhasawebsite.com. So very excited about that. We're also going to try to plan an event for after the show. You can get your tickets at robhasawebsite.com/matchgame. That's going to be on Thursday, October 5th, coming up at the Hollywood Improv. And then also later on in October, Stephen Fishback and I are going to be at Run It Up Reno at the Pepper Mill in Reno, Nevada. If you can make it out there, no ticket required. You can just come on down. And if you want to be in Jason Somerville's Run It Up Reno tournaments that are going on, you can find out more information at runitupreno.com. That's going to be on October 18th in Reno, Nevada. Looking forward to hearing what you guys had to say in the comments. We'll be back with the voicemail show and Taryn Armstrong coming up on Sunday night. And don't forget to check out our new Survivor podcasts that are going to be in the Rehap Ups feed. That would be the RHAP B&B podcast with Mike Bloom and Liana Boris. And then also Why Katrina Lost with David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis. Both are going to be in our Rehap Ups and Survivor podcast feed coming up over the next few days. So be on the lookout for that. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.